Gallery of Art, which William Rockhill Nelson gave to the Kansas City Public Library. So we like to think the Western Gallery of Art became the core of the collection, such as it was. The myth that the Nelson was started with copies of the old masters, which is really a myth, and Mark Wilson paid me to say that, is that actually comes from the library's Western Gallery of Art collection, which was primarily copies, including copies of statuary and old master paintings. But it was originally given to the Nelson and was the core of the collection, though they always intended to collect the real thing. But we like to think, that, therefore, of the Nelson as really our little stepchild that's finally starting to grow up, and now we're going to compete with them and show them how it's really done. So the arts were very important in the library's world, and gradually that went away. But we're trying to revive it now. This is not actually the first exhibit that we've curated of local artists. Kevin Sink self-created his photography exhibit a few months ago. Some of you may have seen that. But that gave us the idea, and some conversations we had with various folks in the Crossroads, to do what Sean has now done for us, which is to begin to curate local artists, great local artists like Lester Goldman, and provide a new venue and something with maybe a little bit of educational flavor, a little bit of library flavor to it. And I thank Sean very much for making this possible on a volunteer basis. So we're honored to have him here. Most of you will know Sean's history. Had his own gallery, was a co-director of the Grand Arts Gallery, and really pioneered the Crossroads. And God bless you all for being here on First Friday. I know there's some temptation to be wandering around down there right now, but the real thing is right here, right now. But anyway, I want to thank Sean for doing that, and you will introduce Elizabeth and Glenn. Is that correct? So now I will turn it over to Sean Kelly, and thank you all very much for being here at this inaugural event.
Welcome, and it was because of me recognizing that Crosby was here that I got interested in coming back to this beautiful building space that Jonathan Kemper kind of nurtured to its beautiful stature here. And all I want to say in introduction to that is I couldn't work with more honest and willing and devoted individuals, Chepto, Henry, Fortunato, Margaret, who's been caring for it, and Kate, who has brought me through here, and Chris Barnacle, who is head of the Volunteer Association. The library is one of the most democratic institutions that we've kept and is here for us. So I feel like bringing the arts alive off the bookshelves, as Crosby has brought the literature to life, to narrate, to perform off the bookshelves, it is now time to take the art section out of the shelf and put the art on the walls and let the visual language that can only be seen and then maybe studied and read about be represented in its natural form. And then we'll go on and on about that. Honoring us tonight in this conversation about one of my favorite artists is one of my favorite artists, Glenn Goldberg. He was our first project that Margaret and I brought to Grand Arts. Margaret's here tonight, I love that. And Glenn was our first project there. And you'll see through his articulation and understanding of Lester's work, which is only a reflection of his own expertise and knowledge of self exposure, which truly art is, exposing yourself, and maybe a common understanding. And the one wonderful thing we have going for us tonight is everybody probably knew Lester. This is a very personal, intimate environment for him. Even if you knew his work or saw one of his performances, this conversation is about you. I want it to be totally democratic. I want to hear what everyone has to say, because it's all of our perspectives that creates the one true visual truth that we can get to. And everyone's opinion and perspective gives us that final picture, the reflection back at Lester, at what we think and who he was. And one of my longtime friends here and nurturing agents from Shea Gordon and the Dead Sea Scrolls that we did at your gallery when I first met beautiful Elizabeth, has gone on to do incredible things and write for our great paper here and give art the voice and the criticism that it so deserves, that entices people like ourselves into investigating a little more what might be presented in front of us. So how it's going to be on this inaugural thing is the start of, I hope, an infinite conversation, a permission for you all to say what you think and feel by us starting off telling you what we think and feel. Lester was a Grand Arts recipient, and way before that, being around the Art Institute and the Nelson there, Lester was obviously one of my great teachers. He was so generous that he would let you into his personal life personally, not only through his art, if you were willing to go there. One discovery we, Catherine and I and Melissa made along the way in this archaeological dig through Lester's work was the ceramic objects. There's only six down there, but I want everyone to go and pay a little bit extra attention to the value, how interesting, and what a diamond in the rough I thought I found when Catherine said, no, these aren't his students that traded for him, these are Lester's. I was like, wow. And I thought I knew him well. Well, that's just a little enticement to go down there. I'm going to leave the PowerPoint running, because the image is forever present around our discussion. The real value are the images, the work. What we discuss, what we criticize, what we try to uncover, Lester saying, is the most intimate thoughts, reflections, and resolution that this great mind and creator and painter gave to us. So he will be forever discussed, brought up, and alive, and communally alive with us as long as we discuss his work. What I'd like, maybe we'll start with Elizabeth, is just like I did, discuss your discovering of Lester, what you think about him, and what you've learned from him. And then I'm going to ask Glenn to do the same thing, and then after that, we're going to open up the floor and let the ping pong match begin. Okay? Thanks for coming. Sign up and get on this emailing list. It is incredible, and there's so much more this incredible institution offers besides what I'm doing, what Chris has done, what Chepto's done, what Henry's done, what Kate has done. There's an army of people behind there, the board, creating things so everyone can enjoy. So with that, I'll let Elizabeth begin.
Thanks, Sean. And first, I want to say what a pleasure it is to see Lester's work again. It's always fun to see Lester's work, and I mean that fun. And I had never seen those clay sculptures before, so that's a little revelation. I want to start with just a Lester story. And Catherine, I know you've heard me tell this before, so I apologize. But I mean, to me, this kind of sums up Lester, and it does, in a way, relate to his art. My husband and I were driving through the Sunset Hills 20 years ago. I forget where we were going, but there was a tortoise that was trying to cross the road. And we stopped, and so we said, what are we going to do? And I said, well, let's just take it to Lester. And he said, okay. So we took, you know, we took the tortoise and gave it to Lester, and that was like a perfectly normal thing to do. And, and I bring that up just because when I had to sit and think about, and he was grateful to get the tortoise, when I had to sit and think again about Lester's work, because I have written on it a number of times, the first quality of his art that comes to mind that I value tremendously is fearlessness. And then I thought, in his later work, which you see downstairs, and also in those clay sculptures, you see organic abstraction that is striving for personal expression, which I think he pulls off, and I think that's difficult to do. I mean, when you think of organic abstraction, a lot of times you'll think of Terry Winters, and you'll think of brains and, you know, plasma and stuff like that, but he really, I think he managed to make personal statements with abstraction that have to do with sometimes with the horrific, and he pulled it off, and he pulled it off with humor. And I think that is so rare to find humor in art, in humor in abstraction. It's just very rare, and that's what I respond to immediately and viscerally when I see his work. Also, Lester's work, I think, for me, isn't dated, and it embraces something that I think art history has only recently been looking at, and that is the notion of the grotesque or the carnivalesque in art, which has not been valued. And Lester was doing this long before it became fashionable to write, talk, or exhibit that kind of work. And I don't know if you agree with me or not, Glenn. Mm-hmm. But in the carnivalesque, you turn things upside down. And with his abstraction, I think, you know, you challenge the status quo, you challenge traditional fine art, which we all know Lester could do very well. He could paint anything. I mean, he was brilliant at that, at representational art. And with that kind of biomorphic quality, is always this sort of fear. What's it going to morph into? And with Lester's art, it was always like, what, you know, it's alive. What's it trying to do, and what's it going to turn into? And so there's this edgy weirdness to the work that I value. And he was someone, I think, who could really deal with the horrific in politics and his later work, which, you know, he dealt with the Holocaust, and certainly his sculpture, his later sculpture, and even the small clay ones down there, you see something trying to merge. It's part representational, part abstract. Something's either growing or changing. It's just alive. Mm-hmm. And also he could deal with personal issues. I think certainly his illness was exemplified in some of the later pieces, but even then there was that combination of humor, wackiness, but this edgy quality, this kind of black humor underneath it all too. And I think it's just very unique work.
Perfect. He was free. He freed himself at somewhere along the way.
He just didn't care what you thought, and it was...
And anything was a potential metal for his magnet. He would let anything kind of that got close to him be absorbed by him. And in such kind of gentle and almost subversive way. And carnival, hysterical, performative, Otto, the performances. All that, how beautiful the perspective. And for us to sit up here and start sharing these kinds of ideas and perspectives helps me. Glenn and Lester became friends via Visa, the Art Institute, coming to town. And Glenn being one of my favorite painters, I was so excited for them to meet, like, what's going to happen? Unlike some friends where you bring artists together and they start telling you look like their grandmother and, you know, you're doing work like me that I did when I was in college, there became this mutual understanding and respect. And tell us what that was like or how you feel about that.
Okay. Well, first I want to sincerely say that I am honored to be here. I very much appreciate being invited to participate in something that basically puts a clear foot forward to honor Lester as an artist and as a human being. So I value that tremendously. I want to open up by saying that from my heart. In terms of how I came to meet Lester, briefly I'll let you know that when I was a student, I was a student in New York at a place called Queens College, which I guess I was very fortunate. I studied with a lot of people who were selfless, traditional, substantial, literally would come into school with huge, thick books, always showing us paintings, taking us to museums, you know, true artists, but more importantly, true giving educators. And I knew at Queens that we had some comrades in our sort of basic mission in terms of other institutions. One of those was definitely the Kansas City Art Institute, amongst others. So I initially heard about Lester through a dear friend of both of ours, Stanley Lewis, a painter who taught at the Art Institute for several years. And then I came to meet Lester and met Warren Rosser. And those two gentlemen always welcomed me to Kansas City. And we would meet whenever I came into town and have something to eat or look at some work. I was fortunate that Lester and Catherine put me up a couple of times, and that's really where I started to see Lester's world, because we would go into the back of his house and drop into the studio. And I feel fortunate to have experienced that. What I would say is that, to echo some of the things that Sean and Elizabeth said, I walked into a very enlivened space, okay? When I was in there, what I recollect is not just paintings and drawings, but huge, fluid, flowing, you know, Rube Goldberg-esque, you know, parts that would accumulate and meander, and I always found them very startling, adventurous, traditionally sound. I do want to say that I think some of the things that we shared was a true belief in, I guess to be simplistic, in traditional form and structure, and Lester certainly had a deep understanding of that in many different areas, drawing, the picture plane, you know, plasticity as we call it, color. So that was always an ingredient in everything that Lester did, even if some people might think that he might have meandered away from that. To my mind, Lester always was a very sound traditional artist. And the real excitement for me comes into, again, I would say his courage and his vision. You know, for me, the most exciting artists are those that are traditionalist, and then they yield as they get older and sort of can't help ourselves. You know, they yield to some accumulative force that we could call their vision or their contribution or their two cents. You know, they put their two cents in, and Lester to me seemed very comfortable exploring his imagination, which I think in this day and age is highly underappreciated and undervalued. His ability to do things that he and maybe most of us couldn't necessarily name, you know, so his ability to function, I guess, the way I see it in the realm of the physical intellect, which words were not so easy often to attach to it. You know, I think that takes courage. It minimizes or limits the ability for people to, quote, understand. I'm trying to stuff in as many things as I can about my experience of Lester and what I value. To me, he was very gentle, you know. He invited me once to one of his classes, and you know, you can tell a lot, I guess, about people when you see their children. You could also tell a lot when you see them in school and with their students. And everyone in the room seemed very comfortable and very respectful and very animated. So I was happy to experience that.
Glenn, what about the, we've talked a little bit today, yeah, about this. You teach also to survive. You can't just do your work and be in your studio, family, whatever
right.
responsibility to yourself, you're in that same position. How that is so amazing to me, the more I realize how much time they spend away from their work, because I forget the work they give us is so spectacular and so generous that I forget how hard you work at making that time available to give to us. But what's that like for you? I mean, I know you teach everything.
Yeah, I've taught extensively, still do. I don't know, I guess it is a way to give back. You know, I mean, certainly many of us found a teacher, a few teachers that somehow supported us in a way that we felt like we could actually do this, you know. So that's very rewarding when I feel like I've participated in helping someone believe that they could do this. 'Cause school can be harsh, you know, either overtly or covertly, people can get the sense, and sometimes, less so now, but sometimes horrifically and brutally, sometimes people in teaching position can kill spirits and, you know, make very clear what they expect and what they think is sanctionable and the opposite. So it's a rewarding enterprise, you know. It's certainly arduous, but loaded with reward, and certainly a place to try to tell the truth and be direct and not separate oneself as if I know and you don't, but family, you know. So before I close, I guess I want to simply state that Lester, although I didn't get to spend a ton of time with him, but I value the time. We actually taught together briefly up in Chautauqua, upstate New York, in the summer. So I guess I would say that we both value tradition. We both try to trust our instincts, as I said, and try to make the contribution that we could. So basically, our lives are about family, literally. You know, I have a wife and a son, work and teaching. You know, and that pretty much covers it all. And then there's this extended sort of family between artists and people who aren't as inclined to compete with each other and to sort of recognize each other. You know, to me, it's sort of like artists are like islands, you know, so you can wave to each other and sort of say, how's it going? How's your garden going over there? How you doing? So Lester was one of those people for me that I, albeit I didn't get to spend a ton of time with him, I always had tremendous respect and love for. So I'll finish it there.
Wow. Yeah. See what I mean about perspective? My antidote for artists is they're their own GM. They're their own corporation. They have to survive and be accountable to themselves as their board of directors, their investors, their everything. And at the same time, take off all their clothes and sit up there for the world to see. That's just how I feel. How do you feel about what? How would you describe poetically an artist's existence?
I don't know.
Good one. Thank you.
I think it could be phrase-making. I've worked also used to work for the USIA and place artists, international artists in residencies around the United States. And I was the go-between between the artists and the State Department. And people in the State Department were just always mad. There's a reason 80% of students with MFAs quit being artists. I mean, it's hard.
Do you both believe that the statement, Joseph Beuys, whoever made it, that we're all artists? Every one of us?
That feels like a stretch to me. I guess I'd have to.
Okay, but I'm in charge. No, yes, we're all artists. I love Glenn. I'm right. Okay, thank you. So, exactly. At least in my own mind. Now, I would love to entertain questions myself, for Elizabeth, for Glenn, we're all here. And lovely Kate will bring you the microphone. Oh, look at, oh, here's one up in front. This is Warren Rosser, the now chair of the Art Institute.
I've been a chair for a long time.
Get out of your chair.
I think what underpins Lester's work forever and ever and ever is his sense of drawing. I think he just couldn't stop his hands from twitching. And I think drawing, whether he was working dimensionally, whether he was working performatively, whether he was working in painting, that was his tool. That was the way he understood his thinking, and that was the way he understood his medium. And I think through that, he created a great adventure for himself.
Okay, my opinion that everyone's an artist. Who draws here? Whether it's writing, in everyone? Does everyone draw? Yeah, doodle, all that? Sometimes, exactly. I want to pick on my next one is Michael Walling. Even though he doesn't have his hand up, I want to know what he has to say. Because I'm running the show, Michael.
This will have to be entirely extemporaneous.
As I expected, but good.
And I think relatively brief. I would just like to say that I thought that Lester was a fantastic teacher and a wonderful influence to his students at the Art Institute. And I think it should definitely not be forgotten that his influence and his encouragement to his students and the vitality of his teaching and the fact that he would constantly be working at the same time that he was teaching in terms of drawing and painting in the studio, I think that was of tremendous value to his students. And I know that they all had the highest regard for him as a teacher. And I think that he had a very constructive influence on the department as a whole. And he was very valuable in every aspect of his role as a member of the faculty of the Art Institute.
Exactly what I expected from you. Thank you.
I came here hoping to get some help with understanding Lester's drawings. And I know he's a wonderful person and teacher, but I don't always get it when I look at his painting. So
I would love
hoping
for you to look at Glenn Goldberg for this one.
Okay.
Well, I don't know that I can really do a good job of solving that problem for you, but I, to me, my answer, you know, would be that beyond what I'm calling sound, you know, understanding and originality, it gets back to that thing I said about bravery and accepting one's own complexity, and I don't think that it's necessarily logical. You know, I think the language itself, you know, like for example, looking at the exhibition, knowing his work, his comfort with moving back and forth from things which on one end could be named, on another end might resonate as just the shape, and then in between things that might lean in towards reference, you know, more or less, where we might say, well, that looks kind of like something and all that. To me, he was just immersed in and accepted his own complexity. So that would be that's the way I understand it. You know, so my guess is if we see, to bring that into the present, I think now words have become way too important and us trying to understand and explain what artists do and where the meaning lies. You know, again, I would characterize it as like a physical intellect, which I think Lester was really fully engaged in. And my guess is that if we went through his work and I pointed something out and I said, Lester, what is that? At times he might say, I don't really know or I'm not sure. So I think there's a certain amount of that built into what he did. like, for example, I wasn't aware of some of the references that I actually came to understand just going downstairs and reading that some of the relationships to some of the forms that he made were actually quite literal. Again, because that would not be necessarily recognizable. So I guess I'm comfortable saying to you that a lot of it is very fluid and imaginative and, embracing language. It's complicated, you know. I don't think it's language for its own sake. I would never say that Lester primarily was concerned with the organization of shapes and colors, you know, and that's where it ended. I think he was working, as I think the better artists do, with his own complexity and self-acceptance and just pouring it all in, and each new work seemed to be a new adventure that was probably reasonably complicated and difficult to navigate through. You know, yeah.
And if you want to continue that discussion downstairs with at any time during the show while it's up, I'll try to make myself as available and down there with the shows as I possibly can.
Okay, I'd like to ask a more specific question along the same lines. Watching the slideshow, you know, the 10-year periods from the early 1960s through to about 1990 or so, fairly linear progression. You can kind of see the line from one era to the next, and the eras are all, you know, representational, modern, illustrative. Then all of a sudden we have the Joe Neese era, and the style changes a lot. And so I guess I'd like to know a couple of things. What happened in 1990, and who's Joe Neese?
I would like to yield to my great Senator Elizabeth Kirsch on this one.
Joe Neese had a terrific gallery in the Crossroads. He was one of the first gallerists in the Crossroads. And very sorry, as I think all of us were, when it closed, because he exclusively showed artists from this area. And it really, I think, was the first gallerist to make people at this time aware of how strong the art scene here was. And he represented Lester the whole time he was open, from the beginning to when he closed. And was it really 2000 he closed?
Did he that early? I'm not sure.
Joe was an engineer whose wife went to the Art Institute and decided, because it was cheap, to buy a building in the Crossroads, and came in with a whole fresh ability to allow artists that they considered important to be shown. Nate Forrest, another great Kansas City artist. But it was a beautiful space. Everyone was surprised and did say, "Who's Joe Neese?" But Neese was nice. One of the original gallerists in Kansas City.
Yes, I'm Donald Batman, and in the mid-70s, I opened a gallery on Westport Road, which was one of the, there were maybe three or four galleries then in Kansas City. But I was the first gallery that focused on regional artists that I considered of significance. And
what year was that, Donald?
1977, and I graduated from the Art Institute in 70, and I had studied with Wilmer E. Wald and Lester and Stan Lewis.
Wow.
But one of the incredible things about Lester...
showed his work, correct?
Well, yes. I showed his work. I did a show annually called Male-Female, the Human Figure, in which I brought together work from about a four-state area every year to show figurative work. And in the 70s, there were no galleries showing figurative work, except... Morgan Gallery did show the figurative work of Lester's back then.
Oh, they did? Oh, uh-huh. Wow. I didn't know.
But the thing that I was really impressed about, you know, artists have a real reputation for egos.
But we're, what was, you told me the beautiful perspective you had of Lester and his work downstairs. That was really, I think, a poignant statement to be made.
But Lester always put work in my show every year, as did Michael Walling and Wilbert, Stan Lewis. This really speaks to the quality of the faculty that the Art Institute has had through the years. They were really humble. Artists are not known for being humble. But Lester was really humble in the most magnificent sense, because he would put his work in a show with unknown artists from who knows where around the Midwest, and just join in the festivities as if it was, you know, being held at the Nelson Gallery.
Thank you. That was great, Donald. Who else?
Well, this is very exciting, and it's really sublime to be here. And I just want to share my own little journey that I've had with Lester. I didn't know him personally. I met him very late when he was in a wheelchair at that last show on Maine. And I have three small pieces, two of which were gifts, and I engage them every day. His capacity for line is just he's. I heard the gentleman use the word traditional. I would say Lester is in the center of the gyre. He's in the center of the circle. Where all great artists reside. The real mystery of the world is the visible. And you never want to stop looking at Lester's work. And to address the lady that has issues with understanding it, his work is inimical to language. It's not about intellection, it's about feeling. All art aspires to the condition of music. And it doesn't need mediation. So drop the Aristotelian logic and just feel the work, become one with it. And one more thing, I have one thing to share. There's a young artist that has a show opening tonight in East Crossroads, Travis Pratt, and I was watching him put his show up about 3 days ago, and he studied under Lester. He went to the Art Institute. And he showed me some things on paper that were like, took my breath away, made my knees buckle. And he said, I went down to see Lester's show at the library 2 weeks ago, and then I made these.
Wow.
So that's his legacy.
Yeah, again, exclaiming the gift, the time, the energy. Ms. Milstein.
Yes, Sean. first of all, I want to thank the library for putting this on. This is just such a great opportunity. And Elizabeth and Glenn and Sean, thank you very much, Crosby. We should be really proud of the library and what they've done. My question is, I haven't seen the show. I don't know if any of Lester's last pieces are in the show, the ceramic pieces. I believe there were ceramic pieces on Main Street. And Elizabeth,
we're not sure of the dates. Where Catherine may know more about when they were done, but that was a real discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth and or Glenn or anyone in the audience, can you speak to those pieces? I, you know, only had an opportunity to see them briefly. But, you know, considering there were his last pieces before he passed, I'd like, you know, to see if anyone can comment on them.
Well, the great thing about that, and I'll let my two associates, because I'm in control, comment on them, because they are so fresh. And I don't really, my perspective isn't together yet on them. So I'll let you both comment on them. Turn on your thing again.
Okay.
Oh, there. No, it's on. Oh. You can just hold it.
I thought those were particularly. I may be my plug in.
I thought those were particularly amazing pieces, and I don't know, Catherine, they're very large, though, Catherine, some of them. So, Catherine, you know, those pieces of Lester's, where are they, and how do you store them or show them? And
take it back to Catherine.
Oh. That's right, those green boards.
Wow.
Okay.
And how do you think they relate to his paintings?
I think, well, those kind of, well, they were gourds, and correct me, Catherine, and they would look like a spine, a kind of twisted spine, and I think he was referring with those somewhat to his own condition at that time, but you'll see those kind of sinuous lines. I think you know, Warren's right. So much of his art is about his drawing, but you'll see those kinds of lines once again. That kind of organic abstraction that I think he did both with his two-dimensional and his three-dimensional art.
Perfect.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
Okay, one more.
Anyone?
Oh, there's one in the middle. Oh, Lester's son.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm Lester's oldest son. I just wanted to. Thank everybody for putting this on. I think it's great. The work, if you haven't seen it downstairs, comes from the mid-80s, generally. I might be off by a bit. And it was a time that I remember Dad being extremely energetic in all of his pursuits. Sean, it's when he made those ceramics. He also was carving stone at the time.
Yeah, I saw those.
And we talked about Jonice, who shortly after he was, quote-unquote, through with that period, began to show these wonderful pieces that were better received by a wider audience than the ones you'll see downstairs today. They were rarely, if ever, shown, I think, as a group. And I think it's because they weren't very well understood. And that's something that I thought I'd ask you guys to address. They were very busy, but they were full of energy, absolutely writhing with energy. So as kind of a transitory period that was difficult for people in the galleries to relate to at a certain level, I thought I'd ask you guys to address that.
I think Glenn's the best. What Margaret and I installed at Grand Arts was do something, work out of your element, be safe, secure, we're taking care of you, we're protecting you, you don't have to sell this. What would you like to do? We're going to support you through this process. And when I saw the ceramic pieces, because Lester didn't choose to do those while he was at a project with us, I thought they were literally students being mused by him. I was like, God, those really look like, wow, that's flattery, but it's almost plagiarism here. And then, oh no, those are Lester's. I was like, what? How many of them? We go downstairs. Oh, there's one on the shelf. There's one. I was like, oh, it was so exciting because it was so fresh for me. And as our first artist at Grand Arts, Glenn's freedom and bravery in going into making these glass pieces, which I heard even his dealers say, well, yeah, not so much. You know, how hurtful is that to an artist? But that's why Glenn will be perfect in answering that question. Yes. What was the question? I don't know. Yeah, sometimes.
I mean, I feel like I understand what you're saying. For me, it really does put me right back to what I was saying earlier about being in your dad's studio. Do you know, adventurous, I would call it, do you know? And again, as an artist, you know, I call it, sometimes it feels like a modest act of bravery, and other times it feels like, gee, do you know, having done this or wanting to do this, do you know, gee, this is really going to further my isolation, and, you know, it's not going to really seem part of who people have identified me, do you know, and I guess that's a huge, great thing when artists feel inclined and actually follow that instinct, you know, and I think your dad is one of those people for me, you know, and it was tangible, you know, one could call it, it's sort of a cliche, but one could call him an artist, you know, easily. But I guess I see it as leadership, you know. I see it as someone who other artists, and certainly that would tie into what's been said in terms of students and younger artists, you know, and this is also a phrase that's been bantied around, but he truly, through what he did, right, gave people their permission and, more importantly, the support to venture out, right, which is the most compelling, difficult, mysterious, beautiful, you know, place to be. So that's my off the, you know, cuff response to that, you know, and I think it's best when we can do that and try to maintain trust in that, regardless of what reward or lack of reward sort of follows that. I think it's a huge, huge issue for artists, probably now more than ever, you know, but a classic one. And I guess I would say he's one of those people that one can look to, and by his acts supports younger artists as well as all artists, and go into those places that we ourselves don't fully understand. And you know, I'm in the middle of that right now, actually. I'm making some work that for me is very exciting and uncomfortable, you know, and I've got to continue it. You know, I'm at a point now where, like your dad, I feel like you got to just keep on going, you know, so.
Elizabeth, do you have something
talking
less vague than what I said?
Well, obviously, Glenn certainly can talk about. You did? I always recognize Lester's work immediately, the abstract work. So I think it always, even though from the 80s or whatever, it still, to me, instantly, oh, that's Lester. It could only be Lester. And always that element of what I call the carnivalesque seems to be there in his work from whatever period. And I just don't get tired of the work. It changes. It looks different over the decades. But it's always Lester to me, and it's always great stuff.
And before I thank you all for coming, I want to make Stephanie and Andy stand up so you know who curated the show, and you can go give them a bunch of questions. And thank you both. It was beautiful.